July 1518, in the French city of Strasbourg, a woman named Mrs. Trophia stepped into the street and started dancing. She seemed unable to stop, and she kept dancing until she collapsed from exhaustion. And after resting, she resumed her frenzied activity. She continued this way for days and days. And within a week, more than 30 other people had joined in this dancing play. They kept going long past the point of injury. City authorities became concerned by the ever-increasing number of dancers. Civic authorities and religious leaders decided to meet, and that the way forward would be more dancing, not less. So they built halls and got professional dancers in to help these dancers keep going amongst injury. They got musicians so that the dancing would have accompaniment. This only exacerbated the contagion, and as many as 400 people were eventually consumed by this dancing frenzy. A number of them died from their exertions. Then in early September, just 2 months after it began, the dancing stopped. I want you to keep in your mind that bizarre image of a dancer unable to stop. Dancing to the point of exhaustion. Even death. I want you to keep that in your mind as we progress this morning. Because as disturbed and perplexed as we are about that image, I want us to be as disturbed and as perplexed by the idea that you and I would refuse rest. That we would keep working, exerting ourselves, even hurting ourselves, and not know how to stop until we drop dead. One of the most powerful things about that story is that the activity is actually fun. It's dancing. We relate to that. It's joyful, it's exuberant, it's play. In large part, we, in our series, Work, Rest and Play, we've tried to say work is good. It is good. God's made it. He worked. Our work, because of the resurrection of Christ, has value. It's not in vain, 1 Corinthians 15 says. Yet, without rest, the good turns bad. That's the tragedy of what happened in Strasbourg 500 years ago. The thing that made it harmful, the thing that was unnerving, the thing that made it even deadly was the absence of rest, or more precisely, rest rhythms. So Mrs. Trophia rested, but that's because she was absolutely knackered, and then she got up again once she'd rested enough and kept dancing to the point of harm. And definitely the leadership didn't help. Imagine that as a group of civic and religious leaders deciding the answer was more work, not less. And we'll facilitate that dysfunction for you by getting musicians and professionals in. Without rest, the good turns bad. We need regular, intentional rhythms of rest rather than just collapse at the end of the path. And there is an important distinction between what happened 500 years ago in Strasbourg and our work today, because that appeared to be this bizarre involuntary affliction visited upon a very small group of people for a very short space of time. We today have a choice. Will we dance till we drop? How can we go about that Sabbath rhythm meaningfully? Two answers to that today. I'm delighted. The second is going to be filled out more by our friend Lynn Grant. I'll interview her later on. Here's the first point. Our rest can be entered into now and will be entered into later because of Christ. That's the point of Hebrews 4:1. And secondly, our rest can be characterized by wise Sabbath rhythms. Let's take each of those into Hebrews 4:1-3. I'll reread this. It's good custom to ask what's the therefore, therefore. First word of our verse, one. Therefore, since the promise to enter God's rest remains, let us beware that none of you be found to have fallen short. For we also have received the good news just as they did. But the message they heard did not benefit them, since they were not united with those who heard it in faith. But we who have believed enter the rest in keeping with what he has said. So I swore in my anger they would not enter my rest, even though his, God's works, have been finished since the foundation of the world. So what the writer of Hebrews is trying to do is connect two stories together. It's the story of the people he's writing to. They're a mixed group. They're a bunch of people, if you read the whole letter of Hebrews, they're a bunch of people there who, they might be Christians, but they're not sure. There are a bunch of folk who definitely are not Christians, who need to be warned. And then there are people who definitely are Christians. Their story, and the writer of the Hebrews makes this clear, is they need to not disobey God's voice. They need to not harden their hearts against God. And to make that point really clear, the writer illustrates from a story from their history. As Jewish believers, some of them, they had this backstory, ancestors of faith, who heard the same gospel message that these Hebrews heard, but didn't believe. They hardened their hearts when they heard God's voice. They heard God's voice in their time wandering in the wilderness, centuries earlier. They heard his voice when he said, "Remember the saving acts I did for you. Obey me, trust me, trust me. I will lead you to a land of rest, a promised land." But that generation did not get there. Hebrews 3:9 says, they always go astray in their hearts. They didn't know God's ways. And so God swears, they will not enter my rest. Don't be like them, is the writer's point. Many churches today include such a mixed group. The people who aren't yet Christians, the people who think they are but aren't, the people who might be, the people who definitely are. All of us need to hear how to stop before we drop dead from dancing. And it's got to do with the second half of Hebrews 4. We didn't hear this read out. This is verses 14 to 16. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. Now, verse 16. Let us approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in time of need. In other words, Jesus has passed through the heavens. Verse 15 that I skipped says that he knows our weaknesses, but he's not sinful. So therefore, he's able to make peace, rest, make rest with the God who demands our obedience. When we trust in him, Christ's obedience is transferred to us. And now, as a great high priest, technical language for someone who goes between people and God, Jesus dispenses that rest. Rest, and we've been thinking a lot about this in our series, has lots of definitions. For some people, you rest when everything that needed to be done has been done. And you say, "Ah, it's finished. Glad all that I've expended has led to this result. Now I can rest." The problem with that, of course, is that it's never over. The work continues. Even when we rest, it's often because we need to get up again to do more work, and taking a holiday, joining a sports team, going off and having a coffee never seems to particularly deal with the rest debt that we can't repay. We want to know deep rest. We know intrinsically it must come from outside us, not from within us. The shortcut answer here, and Hebrews elaborates this in 13 chapters, Jesus experiences cosmic restlessness so that it could be finished. All that needed to be done to make us at peace, at rest with God, done. Tim Keller says, through Christ, the minute you say yes to the rest Jesus achieves, God transfers that perfection to you, and then he looks at you in an echo of the creation story and says, it is good. I hope that makes something very clear. As much as I want to today dissuade us from dancing until we drop, as much as I want to encourage and exhort us to good rest rhythms, and Lynn and I are going to do that shortly, through Christ, you are already rested. You have entered God's rest today. If you trust in him, everything that needed to be done has been done. You are at rest. It's a reality you possess, as well as a reality that you will possess. That's some of the things that come out of this passage. Verses 9 to 10. A Sabbath rest remains for God's people. There's still an aspect in which we wrestle with the struggle for rest now. We do. So we're looking forward to an eternal, heavenly, perfect rest. But as Hebrews 4:10 says, the person who has entered God's rest has rested from their own works, just as God rested from his. So it's all done. It's finished. Everything that needed to be has been done. A.J. Swoboda's written, I think, best book on Sabbath. I've read this series called Subversive Sabbath. And he points out all of this grace, rest, has been beautifully foreshadowed from the moment of creation of people. He points out, I didn't notice this earlier, when Adam and Eve are made, the first thing that they do is rest. They have a day of rest, not work. We know how the story progresses in Genesis 2. They get given stuff to do. They steward creation, they garden. But their first day of existence is rest. They work from rest. They don't rest from work. So the Sabbath, that seventh day rest, is like a gospel image. This is who God is. He gives you rest before he demands anything from you. We don't work to please God. We work of a place of having already received rest and pleasure from God. I think this leads pretty naturally to our second. Our rest can be characterized by wise Sabbath. At this point, sermon, let alone the series, some of you are going, fine, but this is all too abstract. Give me something practical. Like, I want a Sabbath timetable to fill in from 8 till 6 or whatever it might be. This is how you do it. I hope by now that's clear that there's no such thing. As the people of God found in the Old Testament, as the people of the time of Jesus found, as people find today, rigid rule-keeping kills the Sabbath. Sabbath is meant to be awash. Rules kill grace. That said, I think intrinsically we all know there's a difference, there's an intentionality behind Sabbath that is different from just having time off or stopping work or having a holiday. Something else going on. Yeah, and there is. You can't achieve God's rest by resting. Yet, can you learn something from the scriptures about Sabbath keeping, something practical? Yes, you can. Psalm 92. God must have known that God's people would struggle with this in perpetuity. So under the direction of the Spirit, the psalmist writes this psalm specifically for the Sabbath, for the Sabbath day. And from it, we can learn so much about some features of what a good Sabbath might look like. I'll just read out the first few verses because I haven't got time to go through it all. I want to encourage you to look at this during the week and tease out for yourself what might my Sabbath look like, my weekly rest, based on how it looked for the people of God in that time. Psalm 92, 1. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praise to your name, most high, to declare your faithful love in the morning and your faithfulness at night with a 10-string harp and the music of a lyre. Those are not requirements. You don't have to have a lyre. You don't have to have a harp. It's about grace, not rules. You don't need to find a way to express yourself non-verbally with God about how much you enjoy him. You might make a piece of art. You might cook a meal. You might use some music, listen to it, play it, whatever it might be. What exudes out of this psalm is the overflowing sense of goodness and joy to be his. And good memory too, verse 4, you've made me rejoice by what you've done. I will shout for joy because of the works of your hands. Verse 5, how magnificent are your works, Lord. There has to be a place within your Sabbath to remember how good God is and what he has done. Though that can look so different for each of us. Let me just get personal and practical now. What does this look like for me? You better know that your pastor is taking a Sabbath before I tell you to take it. Tuesdays are my Sabbath. I can't take a weekend. Weekends are for work. I'm very tempted to not take my Sabbath regularly because the work of this role demands lots. It crowds out rest. In the busiest of weeks, I need Sabbath more. So I take time aside and I ask questions like Swoboda asks. I share this a little time. Not, is this being allowed? Am I allowed to do this? Would God be angry and be grumpy if I did this? Not that, but does this activity bring me wholesomeness, life, hope? Or does it drain me, stress me out, bore me out, load me up? And I need to be aware, and as Sabbath emergencies happen, God doesn't get cranky with us if we need to be dragged off to do something else because we didn't plan it. By the way, most of my Sabbath emergencies aren't emergencies. They're excuses for me to stop resting. So I need to know that, to know that Sabbath disturbances are often self-inflicted. Check this thing. Look at that person. Do a smidge of work to offset the stress of the next day. No, I need to stop, pause. It's about to be Christmas for this. It's one of the busiest seasons of the year. So this whole series really matters. What I've been covering. You'll notice in the coming 6 weeks, people, maybe you'll be this person, dancing a dance straight out of 16th century Strasbourg, working, exerting, harming oneself. Not knowing how to stop. I hope you've been today disturbed and perplexed that anyone would refuse rest, and you've been encouraged to receive it. I know that sounds ironic, like you were busy enough already, and now you've got to load up. Oh, now I have to figure out what the Sabbath is. I have to do it. What an extra task. That's not quite. We do need help, though, to make it work. So Lynn's going to come forward, and I've asked Lynn a few questions. Someone who's practiced prayerfully and thought hard about Sabbath and leads others to do the same. It's just wisdom in God's people. And I believe God's going to speak now. So come up. Thank you.
Say hello to everyone, Lynn. Oh, we need a microphone. Thanks, Matt. Sorry, forgot to grab that from Wendy.
Hello, everyone. Please excuse my notes. Been unwell this week, so.
Very allowed.
I need my thoughts.
All of us, we're in different stages of life, aren't we? And in the room, you can see people for whom this Sabbath stuff might be quite easy, in inverted commas, and others hard and everything in between. What's Sabbath look like for you? You've worked, raised young kids, retired, haha, whatever that means. Tell us what Sabbath's looked like for you over the years.
Well, I have to be honest, in my earliest years, Sunday was our Sabbath. And it was actually easier then because there were no shops open, you know, and more people went to church. So it was kind of a trend in our society. And then later on, I think Peter and I realised that honouring God shouldn't just be on a Sunday. So we kind of brought, I guess, our Sabbath and honouring to God and tried to bring it into every day. But then I was a busy mum with three children. We both had full-time jobs. I was also running a dance business, so I was a bit like Mrs. Trafia. And I really struggled to find rest. And Sundays were frantic. I was running Sunday school, or so, you know, it wasn't, I'd probably pretty much collapse on Sunday afternoon to get ready for the rest of the week. So I don't think I did it very well. And I think for young mums out there and dads who are working really hard, it's a really hard thing to find. I guess what I started looking for was some real rest in God. How could I actually do this? And I've just got two quick stories. You know, when you're sitting with someone you love or you're very close to, and you can just sit in companionable silence. You'll experience that. And I think that's what I wanted with God. I wanted to be able to just really sit in his presence. So I was looking for that. The other story, related to Wendy's story this morning, is when I was very young, we'd go out for family lunch, maybe to my grandparents, and we'd come home towards dinner, bedtime. And I noticed my three younger brothers and sisters would fall asleep, and my dad would come and pick them up and carry them inside. And I thought, heck, I want to do that. I was the eldest, and I was never sleeping. So the next time we came home, I actually pretended I was asleep. And it was really hard. I had to sit very still, and I had to be very quiet. And my dad came and had to close my eyes. And when he came and picked me up, I had to try and really relax. And it was the most wonderful feeling. I got picked up and I was held. I felt cared for. I felt loved. And I wanted that with God, but it was a bit elusive. So I think discovering rest in God for me came when I started to learn to just be like I was in that car, to be really quiet and silent, and to just let God hold me in it and feel his love for me. And there's something grounding in that, and it's all the promises in the Bible. You come to me and rest, and I'll hold you, and I'll take your burdens off you. Some of the things I learned, everything from a 5-minute sitting quietly with God and resting to a 7-day silent retreat. And I can tell you, my daughter came up to me and said, "Mum, there's no way you can be quiet for 7 days." But it was both wonderful and terrifying. And, you know, I think now I pick up retreats, but more on a shorter scale. But they're wonderful.
You served as a mentor for several years, including groups of women in spiritual direction, some of whom are here today. What have you learned from those women in particular about how women engage with God's gift of rest and Sabbath?
Yes, I think setting up these groups was one of the most wonderful things I've done, because it also gave to me. But it came out of me seeking this kind of rest and, I guess, contemplative way of sitting with God. And I discovered that these women who I invited, I thought, oh, who's going to come? But they were really thirsty for the same thing. And they were often busy mums with kids and jobs and trying to juggle. And I guess the more busy you are and the more balls you're trying to juggle, the more rest you need. So that was the first thing. I realised that they were really thirsty for it. And I reckon some of you will know that thirst to just be restful in God and to know how much He loves you. The second thing was, I guess it's about intentionality with Sabbath, that these women decided, yes, I'm going to commit to this. And I was pretty tough, old school teacher. I said, you have to commit to the whole year. Here are the dates. You have to submit them in your diary. And we met every 6 weeks for 3 hours. And they'd sometimes come and just collapse in my couch and go, oh, I'm here. I wasn't like, yeah, now we can start this kind of restfulness. And we actually practiced together resting in God. So we did other things, but for 1 hour of that 3 hours, I would send them off and it freaked them out at first. One person fell asleep, one person cried. But as they practiced this resting in God and just being silent and alone with God, and it could be in the garden, some of them walked, some of them lay on a bed, some of them sat in a chair, and I'd give them little things, and I'll go into this a bit later, but little things to start that trying to be quiet with God. And they just sat in the presence of God, and like sitting in the sun, you know, on a lovely day, and they just soak up the warmth of the sunshine. That's what we did. We sat under the sun, Christ, and just soaked up His love. There were other things, but that was probably the most important thing, to let go of thinking, let go of all the busyness at home and everything that had to be done, and just be with God.
What do you think is at risk if we don't rest?
Burnout. And I did that several times. I used to be a bit of an ever-ready bunny, and the battery would run out and I'd just crash. And that's when I started seeking not just physical rest, that's important, and you know, this week being unwell, I needed to really rest to get well. But I wanted to find that spiritual rest and that kind of grounding in God. I think what happens if we don't rest and take that Sabbath rhythm, we might not be able to have a whole Tuesday or whole day, but there has to be your own rhythm of finding somewhere to rest in God. And if we don't do that, and what happened to me was I felt I was just operating out of a bit of a shallow base. And really, we can only give out of what we have within. And so for me, that time with God was very grounding and refreshing and enriching, and just it changed my life, basically. I was able to give.
That's good. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we could talk all day. One last thing though, if there is someone, and there are others, I'm sure, more than just one here, and they're wanting to start, they might be a bit daunted by it all. What would your encouragement be?
I would encourage you to hear God's invitation. There are so many in the Bible to just come to Him and be restful with Him. And I would suggest starting small, you know, 5 minutes, sitting quietly with God. I would suggest being intentional. Sometimes Pete and I have to, even in the diary, we have to put in our diary, this is our night, this is our week, I'm not going to pick anything up. And so I guess being intentional with God and saying, right, I'm going to put this time aside. Sometimes it might be spontaneous. Sometimes it might be like this morning, feeling nervous, I sat down for 10 minutes in my special time to be with God. And find your own rhythm. And each one of you is unique, as we know, and therefore you'll have a unique relationship with God and a unique way of relating. So ask yourself a question: how do I best connect with God? Is it a walk in nature? Is it worship and music? Is it sitting quietly? It could even be dancing, but not like this is true. So, yeah, start small. There are lots of apps that can lead you into this kind of quietness. Even Lectio 365, which you might have told us about, has a contemplatio section in it where you just sit after you read the Bible and just sit with it. Pause. The big pause in a day or a crazy moment where you just stop and notice what's going on around and ask yourself, well, where is God in this situation? Where has God been in this day or this week? There is one verse I'd just love to read, that's all right, from Matthew. It's from the a modern translation. It's the one from Matthew about, come to me, all who are weary, and I'll give you rest. And this translation says, are you tired? Are you worn out? Burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly.
Thank you, Lynn. So appreciate your wisdom and your, well, that was preaching to us, God's word to us, so thank you. I'm going to invite the band.